Thank you, Domiti. So this is John Williams. Turns out I'm on Saturdays sometimes here, and today's the day. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's nice to hear the voice of Domiti and Joe. Griffin Filipich is our Saturday producer, and we are here until 12 noon today on social media. I'm WGN King John, and you can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3. By the way, Domiti, Todd Kluber is going to join us, the meteorologist with the National Weather Service, about this weather that you're talking about, which, you know, it's hard to believe that we're going to get 6 inches of snow, maybe, considering how warm it's been. But these things do change over. So Griff's got to call into him, and he's going to join us in about 15 minutes. Actually, about 10 minutes. If you're doing any traveling or know somebody who is, you'll want to make sure you and they are listening in about 10 or 12 minutes when we do a little bit more running down of the weekend weather. The weekend weather. Today is Saturday. I'll tell you what, I shouldn't take Thursday and Friday off because my calendar, my internal clock does not readjust well, right? I have no idea what day it is. Alarm went off this morning. I went, who am I? Where is this? And that's me a lot of days anyway. Mike Ditka is, Joe, you were reading that story or telling us about that. So he's It sounds like as good as can be expected, having suffered a mild heart attack. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Domiti just read something not too long ago saying that his agent stated he got a pacemaker put in, I believe. And, everything that's been reported about it sounds like he is doing, like you said, as well as he possibly could be. Mild heart attack on Wednesday. He was in Florida and right now just recovering from that.
This would be at least his third then cardiac event, because again, I'm reading from the Sun Times now. He turned 79 last month, famously had a heart attack while coaching the Bears in 1988.
Yeah, I just read that too.
And returned to work 11 days later.
I mean, that's like straight out of the Saturday Night Live skit, isn't it?
Totally. Just pound his chest, put down the bratwurst, get back out there.
Grab a beer and just get ready to go back to work.
A sticker. He doesn't blow. Heart attack. Let's go. I don't mean to make light of it because it's not a light topic.
Well, he's doing well now because I mean, when you first saw this report, it seemed like it was going to be so bad.
No, I thought, oh no,
yeah,
oh, no.
Yeah,
79.
Exactly.
In 2012, he suffered a stroke in Highland Park while golfing. Began to feel woozy. Had some difficulty breathing. He spoke to the Sun Times back then, and he recovered from that. He says, I'm okay. I'll probably be here overnight, but I'm fine. That's Ditka with a stroke.
Iron Mike.
You know, the first thing that came to my mind when they did the story, and I had hoped that he was going to recover from this one as well, was him singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
A one and a two. And a three, take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. All these happy nights.
That's a guy going to have a heart attack someday. And legendary coach Mike Ditka hospitalized in Florida, but we wish him and them the best. They say he is recovering. So that's what we know about that. By the way, I have been reading Michelle, speaking of noteworthy Chicagoans, Obama's book. I got it just the other, like 2 days ago, and I've just started it, and I am really enjoying it. She tells great stories. Of course, it's about her life in Chicago as a little girl on the South Side and what that was like all the way through her and Brock's, you know, run through the White House. And it's called Becoming, and it's sold millions of copies, not only in the United States, but worldwide. If you're doing some gift shopping or giving, you might want to consider that. After the 10:30 news, I'm going to steal a topic from Patty Vasquez, who was on with Andy Mazur the other day, and they were talking about movies that freaked you out as a kid. Jen Zanotti was on with them, too, and they were actually talking to a young woman named Tess Claire, who's been a regular guest on Patty's show for years. She's a musician, singer-songwriter. Patty's kind of taken under her radio wing and has been following her career since she was in her middle teens. And so Tess was singing and talking on the radio. She did Silent Night. No, she did White Christmas and did it so well as one of her other songs on Steve Cochran's show on Friday. Patty was filling in. And she said that the scene in The Christmas Story where the boy sticks his tongue on the flagpole freaked her out as a little kid, and that she has never recovered from that scene.
That's funny. I think of another scene from that movie that freaked me out when I was a kid, when he goes to see Santa with the elves.
Oh, yeah, really?
They were terrifying.
I thought you were going to say the pig at the Chinese restaurant, but whatever.
Well, the whole thing's just a nightmare. But
not.
Especially when they go to the mall, Santa, they were so mean and...
Ho, ho, ho.
They were so cruel. Like, there was evil in that guy's eyes.
Really? I mean, are you just making that up, or did that kind of impact
you? Why would I make that up?
Well, because that just seems preposterous to me in a way.
I think a lot of people remember that scene as being like, I don't like this.
I know that a lot of people had that reaction to the flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz, but that was supposed to be a scary scene. Not a scary movie, but at least a scary scene. You know, but if the subject is scenes that scared you, you have to insert inadvertently because, of course, The Exorcist and, you know, pick your scary movie. Those are scary movies. These are movies or scenes in movies that really weren't supposed to freak you out. But dang, people carry those things around. And I'm shocked that anybody would have more than one from A Christmas Story. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yep. Anything by Roald Dahl. Those are all for kids and they're all really twisted.
He's kind of dark.
The Matilda remake directed by Danny DeVito, that's just, there were a lot of really scary scenes in that. And then James and the Giant Peach is the one that really comes back to me. That movie was freaky.
Yeah.
Really freaky.
And wasn't supposed to be freaky? Or?
Well, again, it's like, yeah, probably. But when you're young, you don't know how to handle it.
So I'm going to ask you after 10:30, you've got a minute to think about this. Domati Joe, was there ever a film that, you know, your mom or grandpa said, hey, we're going to the movie and watch this. Here it is. Just put it on and then you go, oh, no. I bet Toy Story had some scenes that
at Sid's house.
Flipped people out, yeah.
Yeah, the kid that destroyed all his toys and turned them into monsters.
Yeah.
My parents, being foreigners, always got confused about what was for kids and what wasn't. So if there was a color for a movie color, then it was for kids. And then you're 5 years old watching Rocky Horror Picture Show, trying to figure out what's happening.
Oh, Animal House. That sounds fun.
Right, exactly.
Oh, kids love animals.
Is it a house for animals? Here you go, Domati. No, that's not what that's about.
Okay, that'll be after 10:30. And then, Griff, I got 3 minutes, and this clip doesn't even take that long. But I missed a couple Saturdays ago because we talked to Teddy Roosevelt on stage at Elgin Community College. Now, you know, I'm famous on this radio station for talking to Thomas Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt. I'm no historian. I wasn't as a kid. I wasn't as a young adult. But when I found this guy, I sort of became at least a student and fan of TR and TJ. You want me to take a break first? Okay. So I'll just play for you, though, a clip that you missed when we come back. And it's of him telling the story of the boat thieves. And you'll hear that before 11. We'll pause here and also catch you up on that weather. If you're traveling or know someone who is, all of that around the corner on WGN.
Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. Love to eat the turkey like a good boy should. 'Cause it's turkey to eat. So good. A turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat turkey in a big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Turkey, turkey D, turkey, turkey dap. I eat the turkey and I take a nap. Thanksgiving is a special night. Jimmy Walker used to say dynamite. That's right. Turkey with the gravy and the cranberry.
I know the words to this song. I could do the... Could you? And it gets a little dated, right? Because Jimmy Walker used to say dynamite.
Can't believe Tyson gave the girl BD.
There you go. The references are dated, but the song is still just so joyful. It's just so fun to listen to Adam Sandler from Saturday Night Live.
And just really quick, he has a new stand-up special on Netflix called 100% Fresh. And most of his recent output has been horrible, as you know. A lot of terrible movies from him. But this is really fun, and it reminds me of that song.
So he's doing stand-up?
Yeah, yeah, and singing a lot of songs like that still.
Oh, no kidding. I'm sorry. So that's a they just made a movie.
There's a new Netflix special called 100% Fresh.
How about that? Adam Sandler. How about this? The National Weather Service, WGN Radio, we're all saying that some weather is coming, which is just hard to believe because literally the sun is fighting to get through some clouds downtown Chicago right now, and it's 46 degrees. Todd Kluber is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Hey, are you there?
Yes, hi, John.
We're good on this, right? You're sure?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty still, as always, especially this time of year when we're still dealing with the difference between rain and snow and that transition. But we are looking at a strong low pressure system tracking across Illinois during the day on Sunday, with precipitation beginning as rain Sunday morning across the Chicago metro, but then quickly changing over to snow during the afternoon on Sunday. And this transition could be very quick, seeing treacherous conditions and rapidly deteriorating conditions across the area during the afternoon hours.
Yeah, well, the way I was reading about it, the winds could be up to 35 miles an hour. And, you know, I don't mean to call into question what you guys do, Todd, because you're the meteorologist over there, but it's 46 degrees. I guess the question on a lot of people's minds is it going to be cold enough for it to turn to snow? It's not going to be rain, right?
Right. It may start off as the rain, but we will see that transition pretty quick. And there is still some concern right along the lakeshore, especially at the warmer lake waters, that right in the downtown area, for example, we may actually hold on to the rain a little bit longer, but especially once you work inland, closer to, say, the west side of the city and especially in the suburbs, that we should see that cold air filter in pretty quick during the afternoon to transition completely over to snow.
Wow. So then walk me through that. Sunday afternoon, maybe in the south, and then it works its way up, and the further away you get from the city, say toward Rockford, the more likely you are to get more snow. Is that it?
Yes, and actually there will be a very sharp northern cutoff on the snowfall, and that's going to be right near the Rockford area. But we'll see that transition actually occur from, say, northwest suburbs, say, Elgin, and into the north suburbs and working south and eastward into the city and then to the south suburbs through the afternoon and even into the early evening hours.
Yeah. Okay, so if I'm traveling then, I guess the concern would be folks traveling back to Chicago. When do you think they need to be in their driveways to try and avoid this?
For those that are trying to travel back, let's say, right into the Chicago area, it would probably be by mid-afternoon, say the 2 to 4 o'clock time frame on Sunday. But even to be safe, probably even early afternoon would be a better option. We are concerned about those. We know that there are a lot of travelers, and we are concerned about those travelers out there, and especially anybody traveling to the north or west may encounter quickly changing conditions on the roadway, especially when that snow or that rain changes over to snow.
And are you saying that? Are you saying that it might be happening? Rain to snow, it's going to actually get that cold by middle afternoon tomorrow.
That's the anticipation. That's where the uncertainty lies in how quick that transition will occur. We could see that transition occur anywhere from early to late afternoon at this point. So that's more the reason, at least the earlier the better, if you can get to your location during the day on Sunday.
Todd Kluber's a meteorologist at the National Weather Service. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your working this weekend, and we'll be in touch.
Of course. Thanks for having us on, John.
You bet. Todd Kluber over at the National Weather Service in Chicago. Hey, Griff, we may have time, actually, to play the clip from Teddy Roosevelt. So he's on stage with me at the Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater. Well, the timing on that's apropos. And we are just telling stories. And towards the end of the show, Teddy Roosevelt talked about a time where they were in a blizzard themselves, or at least terrible weather conditions. He's out west, and someone stole their boat.
We are going to get the boat thieves. And my men said, how? They have the boat. I said, we are going to build a boat. And so we built a boat. We built it, we put in 2 weeks worth of grub, and our rifles and our pistols and so on, and off we went. And we tailed them for 3 or 4 days. Of course, they didn't know that we were coming. And finally, we came around a corner in the river, and there they were. And so I said to the men, prepare yourself, we are now going to make a citizen's arrest of the boat thieves. So we got out our guns and rifles, and we snuck up on them. We disarmed two of them, and one was off hunting. So we had those two settled, and the ringleader, a man named Red-Headed Mike Finnegan, came up over the bend, and there I was. And I held out my rifle, and I said, "Halt! I arrest you in the name of justice." And so he surrendered. And now I had the three boat thieves. I had my boat back. And now all I had to do was get them to justice. But the river was freezing and thawing and everything went wrong. Blizzards. We ran out of food. And at night we couldn't tie them up because if we did, they would get frostbite. And so we had to keep them loose. But then that meant we had to stay up all night because if we fell asleep, they would abscond or worse. It turned out to be something of an ordeal. And eventually, I left my other two men and I said, "I'll march these desperados overland to Dickinson, a distance of about 45 miles. Cactus and gumbo and slush and mud and blizzards and wind and
all for the purpose of just
to send them to justice." So I had to stay awake for 72 straight hours. Have you ever done this? It's a little wearying. I was later explaining this story to the sheriff in Dickinson. He said, "Why didn't you just hang them?" He said, "You would be perfectly within your rights just to hang them." I said, "That is not the Roosevelt way." So I brought them, but I didn't know how I was going to stay awake. Well, I happened to have in my bag, I always carried books, I happened to have the just published English translation of Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, the longest novel ever written. And I read it out loud to them. I read Anna Karenina to the boat thieves, stopping from time to time to do a little literary criticism. I don't really like Tolstoy very much. His morals are suspect and his pacifism is appalling, but I read it out loud and I finished it. I'm sure they just wish that I had hanged them. And then we were out of books, and so I said to this Finnegan, I said, "Old chap, you don't happen to have a book, do you?" And he did. He had a copy of a dime novel about Jesse James. I said, "Let me borrow it. I'll give it back to you after your penitentiary term." And so I read that too, and I got them to justice in Dickinson, and I turned them in. I got a $50 reward. Mileage plus reward.
That's our Teddy Roosevelt on stage at Elgin Community College. When I tell you that Roosevelt's on stage and he's energetic and he's true, he is. The same is true for our Thomas Jefferson. And I don't know when the next show with either of those bad boys is going to be. Certainly next fall, maybe in the spring. But when you hear us say that I'm going to talk to the president on stage, you will not be disappointed.
And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to...
I only know a couple of Thanksgiving songs, and this is one of them. And this song goes about 15 minutes.
...church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Fatsha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with Arlo tears Guthrie. In our eyes,
Arlo Guthrie and Alice's Restaurant. You know, and whenever I hear that song, I smile. Sometimes I do take the time to listen to it, but there's just a couple of phrases from that song, like implements of destruction and fancy cop equipment and, you know, the chorus to the song. I don't know, do you guys, I'm probably the only one here that appreciates that. It was recorded there in 1967, and I wasn't paying attention then, but in 1977, I used to listen to it, and I listened to it ever since. That may be the first time you're listening to that song. Am I right about that?
I have heard it, but I think because of you.
Yeah. Well, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I like it.
Yeah, it is a fun song.
I've never heard the whole thing. I don't really know. I know the tone better than the story.
Yeah.
I just remember him being like, ah.
Well, if by tone you mean his wry sense of storytelling.
His drawl.
Yeah, well, it's all part of the act.
Yeah, yeah.
Arlo Guthrie. And by the way, the story is as good as the effects. I mean, he's really got a fun story to tell, and the crowd is totally into it. And by the end of the song, everybody knows you can get everything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Patty Vasquez filled in for Steve Cochran on Friday and Justin Kaufman, and she was talking to Jen Zanotti and Andy Mazur, and they had a guest in the studio. I mentioned this earlier, but now I want you to be part of the conversation. Their guest was a young lady named Tess Clare, and Tess is a musician, and she just kind of offhandedly said that as Christmas movies go, the movie that freaked her out was A Christmas Story, where the kid sticks his tongue on the flagpole. And so she was kind of traumatized by that. She doesn't like that movie. And then Patty volunteered that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory kind of messed her up. I think Andy Mazur, or maybe that was Andy Mazur's, but they were all sort of chiming in with movies that were innocent enough, but we all carry around these sort of surprising or inadvertent scary moments. Wizard of Oz has to be that for a lot of you. And I'm wondering what that was. 312-981-7200. Call or text and tell me the movie scene that wasn't supposed to be scary. You know what the one was for me? Was, this is so embarrassing, but when Sigourney Weaver levitated in Ghostbusters.
You weren't a child really then, were you?
I was in my 30s. And I don't like demonic stuff, you know? That's my one, like, that's my spot in horror movie repertoires that I'm not comfortable with. And so I'm enjoying this funny movie with Bill Murray and the gang. And then she starts to levitate, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to check out here. That was a complicated thing for me. I'm not proud of that. Turns out it wasn't that scary after all, but the first time I saw that, I went, whoa. Domiti, I don't think, has an example per se, except that his parents used to take him to inappropriate movies.
Yes.
Or rent inappropriate movies for him. Because they weren't from this country and they didn't really understand what they were setting the kids up for, right?
Or Beavis and Butthead was a nice childhood cartoon.
Right, yeah.
They would think,
right.
Yeah.
Cartoons, what could go wrong?
Exactly. But, you know, you just made me think of one, though, because not Wizard of Oz, but The Wiz. I enjoy it very much as an adult. Back then, not so much.
Diana Ross and Michael Jackson.
Michael
right?
Jackson, and those costumes were scary as all get out to me. They were so creepy. Oh my God. I couldn't get past the Wicked Witch of the West?
Witch of the West, yeah.
Scary as hell.
Or is the Wicked Witch from the East? The good witch is from one and the bad witch is from the other. You got to get those straight.
Both of them look crazy to me.
A text. I don't know if this is related. Do you know what Return to Oz is? I'm sorry, I don't know what it is. But a texter texted in and said, terrifying. Return to Oz, 1985.
Now, remember, the thrust of this is not scary movies per se, and I don't know that movie. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the idea is that they're, you know, scenes from movies that you think would be safe, but weirdly, they freaked you out. Hey, Frank, you're on WGN. Hi.
Good morning, King John. I have two movies that there's scenes that are kind of scary. First one is Willy Wonka, like you described, when that paddle boat is going through the tunnel on the Chocolate River.
That was it for just, Patty, that very scene, yeah.
Yeah, when that movie is broadcasted on regular free television, that scene is deleted.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. It's only about maybe a 90-second clip, but it's disturbing enough to children to where it really doesn't need to be shown.
Well, it is. Also, Charlie starts screaming profanities, so they can't.
Is it really?
No, no. Scene?
No. The second one is in the original Superman movie when Miss Tessmacher double-crosses Lex Luthor. He hangs her in the elevator shaft and cuts the rope and feeds her to the lions, to tigers. And just before she reaches the bottom, Superman flies into the elevator shaft and picks her up, brings her to ground level, and says, oh, Miss Tessmacher, by the way, your mother sends her love. But they deleted that from free television.
Yeah, that sounds pretty horrifying, terrifying, something. Wowzers. All right, thanks for the phone call.
Okay. Come on.
Scenes from movies that that one sounds like that was supposed to terrify him.
Somebody said the jangling keys in E.T. really scared my children. On the Ghostbusters tip, somebody said the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man when he got angry. That was even scarier than the Sigourney Weaver.
Well, I guess I don't have license to laugh at that because I didn't think the angry Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man was all that frightening, but... Then again, none of us were supposed to be really frightened in that movie. The jangling keys in E.T., huh?
Yeah, it's very like specific moments that are seared into people's minds. I was mentioning James and the Giant Peach because there was a spider that was supposed to be nice, but she really did scare me. And he had two ants that were, I don't know.
You don't have to explain it entirely.
I guess not, yeah.
You got your thing. If that's your thing, that's your thing.
But that, like every single Roald Dahl book and then adaptation of his books into a movie, they were all... Ugh.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, this all started when Patty's guest said it was the scene from The Tongue on the frozen flagpole in Christmas Story. Who knew? 312-981-7200.
Today, it's the end of the regular season for the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats as they welcome in the Fighting Illini in the battle for the Land of Lincoln Trophy. The pregame at 2. I'm Dave Edit. Ted Albrecht and I have the kickoff at 2:30.
Hear the Blackhawks on AM 720. Hear the Big Ten West champion Wildcats on WGNRadio.com. On your smart device with the WGN Radio app and on the air at AM 1000.
Drip, drip, drip. Has that been the sound you hear when you try to fall asleep at night? If so, your leaky faucet is costing you more than just a good night's sleep. It's costing your hard-earned money to go right down the drain. So don't wait. Call the experts at ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric to have it done now and done right. Book your appointment today at 4abc.com. That's the number 4abc.com and consider it done.
Saturday, November 24th, Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions presents Chuck Liddell as he takes on Tito Ortiz in the third and final chapter of their historic rivalry live on pay-per-view at FITE.TV. That's FITE.TV. When these two legends strap on the gloves, you know it's going to be an entertaining fight, and you're not going to want to miss it. Pay-per-view is the best way to see it up close at FITE.TV. It's Chuck the Iceman Liddell against the Huntington Beach bad boy Tito Ortiz, Saturday, November 24th.
You may have heard of our Chicago personalized calendars. It's been 11 years offering these iconic gifts with our friends at Tucas. Experience these all-new stunning calendars once again. Any name you choose is placed into 12 beautiful images of Chicago, as if they were photographed naturally. To see these stellar gifts in person and to order these great holiday gifts yourself, go to WGNRadio.com and scroll to the feature section.
Hey, it's Steve Cochran. According to the American Resort Development Association, the average annual maintenance fee for 1 week at a timeshare is $980. That's $980 a year, whether you used your timeshare or not. If you've tried selling it, if you've tried giving it back to the resort and you still can't get out, trust the pros. I'm talking about Timeshare Exit Team. The only company I speak of when it comes to this, they're going to get you out or give you a full refund. 844-409-EXIT. 844-409-EXIT. Online, it's easy. It's TimeshareExitTeam.com.
Thank you, Steve Cochran. This is John Williams. Let's pick up a phone line and say hi to Eric. You're on WGN. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. When I'm 55 years old, and when I was 3, I remember this like it happened yesterday. My mom was watching that soap opera, As the World Turns.
Yeah.
And there was a scene where this guy was on a big luxury liner cruise ship, but it was a paddle wheel type thing. Somebody pushed him off, and I was watching it, and he landed in the paddle wheel to be chopped up and drowned at the same time, and it made me absolutely hysterical. I remember running into the kitchen telling my mom that this guy got shoved off the top of the ship, And she was trying to, you know, tell me, oh, that's just on TV. That didn't really happen. But I remember that like it happened yesterday. It was just totally unexpected and wasn't supposed to be a scary scene. But
wow,
it's ingrained in my mind.
Isn't that funny? As the World Turns did that?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, she watched that while she was, you know, doing housework and so forth.
Sure,
and
sure,
that
yeah.
was her. That was her, you know, her soap opera for the day. And I was just standing in front of the TV and I watched that scene and it just, you know, made me hysterical.
So when we do those commercials for the paddle boat up and down the Mississippi, hey, I'm John Williams. Join Brenda and I as we paddle up. That probably isn't your cup of tea now, is it?
No, that'll trigger that memory in my brain.
Have a good day, Eric. I appreciate your call.
You too.
Bill, you're on the air. Hi. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, King John.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I love your show. When I was 6, 7 years old, my father always loved taking us kids to see musicals. So every musical came out back in the day. So he decided to take us to see Cabaret. I got to tell you, the whole Joel Grey thing freaked me out as a kid. As you remember, everything, he's up on stage doing his, you know, whatever he was doing.
Yeah, right.
But for a 6-year-old kid, Joel Grey can be kind of creepy.
I'm not sure. Your parents, when you were 6, took you to see Cabaret?
Yeah, well, my father was a single father, right? And sometimes he'd take us to see Herbie the Love Boat. The next week he'd take us to see James Bond or something like that, right? So it was kind of alternated.
Yeah.
But, it's a musical, right? And songs are great. But, yeah, that was kind of a creepy thing, the whole Nazi stuff going on and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
a lot to process for a 6-year-old there. And so that kind of seared into your mind, huh?
Yeah, so the whole Joel Grey thing has always just been kind of creepy, right? So, anyway, yeah, seared into my brain.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Have a good day.
Gotten 3 texts about the evil guy that captures children in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, wow.
I don't really remember.
Yeah, but. Well, that way predates you. Mm. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Not supposed to be a scary movie, kids.
And then there's like borderline things. Somebody said the scene when the guy's face melts in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Isn't
that Temple of Doom? I'm not an expert on that.
Well, I know the scene.
Yeah.
And whatever the movie was. Yeah,
that's not supposed to be scary, though.
Right.
It's kind of borderline. But no. you could reasonably go to that movie and think it's not going to be anything that bad. And then a guy's face melts off. It happens, though. I mean, what?
Still, that's not Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right? Or, well, okay. But that's
no, yeah, I like the more mild ones that you don't really understand why. But sometimes kids just
get it in their head.
You don't know what's going to scare you. Somebody said Fantasia, the mountain. What was it? The mountain. Some. I think a lot of the stuff in Fantasia is actually kind of creepy. But there was one specific segment. I don't like that movie.
Well, I think the scene where Bambi's mother gets killed is tough to watch, too, if you want to go way back. Spoiler alert.
Oh, somebody said I was shaken up after 101 Dalmatians. Cruella. She was freaky.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, sure, sure.
It's like the opening scene of Up is some of the most emotionally torn.
Right. Now it's just freaky
40 seconds.
In how real it gets so quick. We just finished up the Halloween season, and Hocus Pocus is one that's not supposed to be scary, but is it Bette Midler in that movie? Her makeup is so dramatic.
Really?
And, like, they make her look so horrible and freaky, and I remember not liking that movie when I was a kid. I was like, could we not?
Speaking of horrible and freaky, can we just play this sound clip? Guys, Joe Domati, tell me if you can tell me what this sound is. Hit it, Griffin. That's it. This is all it does. You know what it is?
Is that the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz?
No, that's Walmart.
Somehow, those two aren't too far apart.
I absolutely don't understand the thing where they open up the gates and everybody runs in and gets a TV, and then they all start fighting. I think I understand those people. I mean, they're out there, and what is Walmart or these stores thinking? But it's a tradition in America that, you know, the Saturday after Black Friday, you go online and you look at videos of people beating each other up over some, it used to be CDs. Shame on you if you're beating somebody up over a CD now, but now it's TV sets and consumer electronics and stuff. And I'm like, Shay, that's on Walmart, man. That's on Walmart. You stand these people in line. You build up this sense of anticipation. It's the big savings. And then the gates come open and people just lose it. I mean, it wasn't just one video. I was scrolling through a bunch of them and they're all kind of the same. I don't understand that.
I think the log line on Black Friday this year is that it's like mellowing out a little bit because of online retail.
Yeah.
And there's less reason to actually do it. But of course, there's still going to be a bunch.
If you just Google Walmart Black Friday brawl, you could spend hours today. But you're right about that, Griff. And I also noticed that there was less talk this holiday season, this year, about do retailers stay open on Thanksgiving? Do they open at midnight on Thanksgiving? And that kills the dinner for the family that has to work.
It's more of like a month-long thing now. Like all of November is like Black Friday, a little bit.
It feels like that. And so this whole crush about Thursday and first thing Friday and what that does to the families and who these crazy people are, I just didn't sense that as a major conversation this year.
But then on Saturday, there the videos are.
But there they are. But they came through for me, the Walmart brawlers. 47-48 for folks, and imagine that we're talking about a snow event Sunday sometime. If you're listening to us in Valparaiso, you might not get any snow. If you're listening to us in Rockford, you might get a half a foot. And then just figure bands of more snow as you go from northwest Indiana to northern Illinois. And then after Rockford, we were told by Todd Kluber, it kind of drops off, the meteorologist with the National Weather Service. So it's just that path of snow. And the further you get from the lake and the further north you go, the more likely it is that you're going to see some. Downtown, maybe a few inches. But it's still kind of hard to get your head around with it being 47 outside. And the timing couldn't be worse because Todd was telling us a little while ago that if you're not out of your car and back in, say, Chicago by noon, 1 o'clock tomorrow, you might be driving in some really bad stuff. So plan accordingly and know that they're not always perfect about these things, but that's the current thinking on that right now. The award-winning Mincing Rascals. It was judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago by some journalist types this year. It's something we record every Thursday. This week we did it on Wednesday because of the holiday. It's me. It's Steve Bertrand. It's this week also Justin Kaufman, who co-hosts the morning show with Steve Cochran. And then you also hear in this case the voice of Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist. And the gang covered a bunch of stuff this time. Remember, at the end of the podcast, we've always got our recommendations for you. It's a free podcast. It's called The Mincing Rascals. We'll get to a conversation about why Justin is so excited about the mayor's race. But here we are about midway through this week's pod. Okay, hold on. I'm going to change subjects.
Before you do,
yeah.
Can we, Michelle Wolf, you know, was the last Correspondents' Dinner host, right? And they announced this week that Ron Chernow is going to do it instead. You have a Ron Chernow book.
The historian.
You have a Ron Chernow book in your office there.
I sure do.
The Ulysses S. Grant.
Doorstop, too. It's
huge. I give you $1,000 if you read it.
Yeah. I collect those books as souvenirs, but I don't really read
anyway,
them.
Anyway, so Donald Trump went after Michelle Wolf, called her a so-called
bomb so bad.
So-called comedian, said she's a so-called comedian, and she responded on Twitter. She said, "I bet you'd be on my side if I'd killed a journalist."
I think it's a smart move by the journalist to go with it.
I don't know
what you do with the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner. It's supposed to be funny, but how can it not just make things worse or make the press look bad?
Well, the thing is that someone like Chernow, he could. I don't know what kind of speech he's going to deliver.
What if he's just on fire?
But
if he's blue?
He could blister the president and not in this kind of way that late night comics do with roast, but he could just do a lot of he could do a very powerful, muscular, historically based speech about why this guy is.
And
so
I push back on Trump's assertion in that tweet that she bombed the so called comics. She bombed so bad that they had to change it. I'm like, I thought she was hilarious.
Yeah.
Now it was very pointed and very political, but it's hilarious.
And it said things about Sarah Huckabee Sanders' appearance and things that maybe.
So
weird.
What?
Nah,
he hardly did. He said, "Oh, I mean,
oh my God, you guys! Wait. I just gave you a drop of push." Back. Come
no,
on.
I mean,
pushback here, please.
So you're not, so we don't make fun of the way Barack Obama looks. That's wrong, but you can't make fun of the way Sarah Sanders
looks.
That's
right, Steve. In America today, women and men are regarded differently when we talk about their appearance.
I thought she was funny.
I feel really bad if your last name is Trump and you're listening to this right now, because our next topic is, should we lock Ivanka up? Lock her up.
Are they the same, though? Eric? Are they the same?
No, they're not exactly the same. They're not exactly the same. I don't think she was dealing in... we don't know, first of all. We don't know for sure.
Well, that's the point I made with John yesterday when he was apologizing for Ivanka. that at this point, they could be the same, right? Because if we take this at the point where Hillary Clinton said, well, there was nothing classified, it was all personal, blah, blah, blah.
And they went deep and found it.
And then they went and found that it wasn't. And that's where we are with Ivanka Trump.
We're right now at the point where she's saying there wasn't. And it's hard to believe that she was actually dealing in that much in classified information. She was, you know, an assistant to the president.
I didn't think it was that big of a deal when Hillary Clinton did it, frankly. So I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say it's a big deal if Ivanka Trump did it. But I sure would like to see some equal outrage from the people who did think it was a big deal.
I think that's the key. Is it's just the hypocrisy, the equal outrage. That's a great way to put it. If you're going to be outraged about one thing, be outraged about the other.
Well, but that point makes itself. You know, I'm directing this to Eric because I think I know what he's thinking. And that is...
You just answer for me, too, then.
I don't think Democrats should try and cash in on this. I think let it go. Let it go. Don't run this thing through the mill the way we did Hillary Clinton, because then you are just back at their level again. And we had an argument like this, similar when we talked about Supreme Court justices. But go ahead, Eric. I'll let you speak for yourself.
There is this issue
with
Hillary. Yeah, thank you. With Hillary, I mean, they were relentless about Benghazi. For what, how many months that was, and put her on the hot seat for 12 hours. And I mean, the relentless pursuit of her, and then how they just will just back off and with these other things that I think are equally or more scandalous, such as what the Khashoggi story. But I agree with John in that I think actually pursuing this and pointing out the hypocrisy is important, but actually pursuing it and working up this kind of umbrage that I don't actually think that many Republicans actually were upset about Hillary Clinton in her email, because there's no evidence at all that anything that she did leaked out, that there were any secrets that anybody got a hold of that was actionable, that anybody's life was put in danger. And I'm sure that's true here too, that, you know, it's important to underscore the necessity for security and so on, but the idea of locking somebody up.
You're talking about politics too. I mean, they knew in circles that Hillary Clinton was going to run for president, and so putting her through Benghazi, Ivanka Trump, she's not running for anything. Maybe she's on a short list for next president. I don't know what the deal is with that. But the concept being that she's not at the same level. So there was political points to win by putting the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton through that ringer.
It's just shockingly naive, though, isn't it? Or ironic or stupid or whatever. But, I mean, that's why her dad is president, because Hillary used her private email. And she was using her private email.
You mean the Trumps don't think the rules apply to them?
I guess not.
There was some sexism that came out. I was reading a think piece about her response, Ivanka's Trump response was sexist, this idea that I don't know any better.
She said that?
That was the idea. That's been their point.
She wasn't counseled the way incoming people are counseled on these sorts of things.
Just the defense of that and her and this idea that I'm just a dumb daughter who doesn't know. And it's so garbage.
The entire campaign was about Hillary's damn emails. Yeah, know, and so Ivanka claims that she has no idea about this distinction between...
They think we're all stupid.
Emails.
They think we're stupid.
Does anybody want to talk about the mayor's race for Chicago and how that is shaping up? Justin, what are your thoughts about that?
I love that there was a poll that came out this week. It was from, I forgot the name of the consulting firm, but it was one that was used by J.B. Pritzker in the governor's race. It had 15% for Tony Preckwinkle, 13% for Susana Mendoza, 9% for Bill Daley, 6% for Paul Vallis. No one else registered. And I thought that was very interesting, because one of the things that we found in 2016 about poll taking is that there's a certain structure and format and formula that polls will use. And a lot of that has to be calling landlines and finding different people who are already registered in the system, the way they do polls, right? Amara Enya's name does not come up. Nothing. Now, if you're not familiar with Amara Enya, she's the woman who was endorsed and supported by Chance the Rapper.
And Kanye West.
Kanye paid her debts, yeah.
I follow Amara Enya, and she was a guest on The Download. I've known her very well, and they're not going to get a Amara Enya person on that poll. Calling a landline.
Did they not ask? Oh, they're not going to. Oh,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Just saying they're not going to get that. So,
and they
just
did vote this November.
Yeah, right. So to me, it's just interesting that I still feel like there's an energy and a very interesting campaign that's coming up here. You're going to have two hardcore Democrats in the state of Illinois, Susana Mendoza and Tony Preckwinkle. A lot of familiar names, Bill Daley,
Chico, Paul Vallis.
And then
McCarthy,
the question about a young vote. A young voter, we talked about this the last time I was on, that came out in droves in November, more so than people who were 55 to 64. And will you see a movement that is not covered by the media, that's not in part of the established Democrat politics in the city of Chicago?
Where will we see it happening before Election Day? I mean, is it going to be in the alternative web press?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. I'm thinking about the way that Amara did her signature gathering. They call them pull-ups. You guys know what that is? Like, that's the sort of term, almost like a hip-hop term. Pull up. Hey, pull up at this party. Pull up. Pull-ups. And the concept being they'll have it at different parties, and the people who were gathering signatures, at the end of the day, they come in and they deliver their signatures, and there's a concert. And it might be Chance on stage. It might be somebody else. But the point being, they're playing to a very specific millennial set of engaged, I don't know if I want to call them voters yet, but engaged young people, college kids and whatever. And they're having, and you don't see these. That's not on the front page of the
and
Tribune.
I'm
just saying there's something there that is not usual politics in the city.
And if that support manages to coalesce, if that young support manages to coalesce behind Amara, then you do have the possibility that she would get into a runoff.
I just think, I love it. I can't wait.
No, this is a case for ranked choice voting, which we had in Minnesota. And ranked choice voting is where you get to vote for multiple candidates. You could vote for five people for mayor. You say, here's my first candidate. And say it's Willie Wilson. But you really don't want to vote for Willie Wilson because you know he's not going to win. And why waste your vote? You don't with ranked choice voting. You get to vote for who you want. And then after they count all of the ballots, if Willie Wilson is in last place, every Willie Wilson vote goes out. And then they count your second vote, which could be Susana Mendoza, say. So now, even though you want to vote for Susana Mendoza as the safe choice because maybe you don't like somebody else, you know, you can in fact vote for the person you most want, be them a long shot, be them your Bernie Sanders, but you don't want to vote for Bernie Sanders because you know that'll actually favor the Republicans. It's the same thing with ranked choice voting. Is a very interesting concept, and they do that in Minnesota.
Do you remember, Eric, how we used to elect the members of the state legislature, the House?
Because I wasn't around, but
you weren't. Because I was a kid.
Three member districts, all right?
There were three.
Two member districts. Well, go ahead.
You had more votes than you did members you were voting for, or something. Or you could vote for three times. You could vote three times for one person, or one time for three people, or
two times for one person.
Right. And I think Pat Quinn was instrumental in getting rid of that.
Yeah. Right. Which and I guess the idea, and again, I wasn't around because this is the '70s, right?
Yeah, the legislature was huge.
Well, where were you? You're the oldest of us.
Yeah.
Where were you doing? You were around.
I was in high school in the 70s.
You high school hippie.
My dad was a precinct committeeman. I was handing out Chuck Pengel stickers.
That's great.
Remember Jerry Joyce, state senator?
But the idea behind this, I guess Pat Quinn thought that it was too expensive. He had to pay all these legislator salaries. But my understanding is that it contributed to a lot of bipartisanship because you would have a lot of Republicans representing people.
They'd be in there, right? You're right.
So good. And you know, John, your point is really good. I think ranked choice voting is a very smart way to go about it. You could do that, and then you wouldn't even have to have a final runoff.
It's what some people describe it as that. It's a spontaneous or simultaneous runoff vote.
It's a simple runoff. On the other hand, it's going to be interesting when it comes down to the two who I'm almost positive are going to have a runoff.
It's a very, I think, a very healthy thing for the city of Chicago that there are so many candidates and good candidates that want to run this city.
Exactly. I heard so many people complaining during the gubernatorial race, like, these two.
Yeah, not the case in Chicago.
This is the opposite of that.
This is going to be just a wild rumpus.
I love it.
The wild rumpus election for mayor of Chicago, says Eric Zorn and a very enthusiastic Justin Kaufman. One other observation about ranked choice voting, which sounds complicated, doesn't it? And you have to educate people, and who wants to get educated about voting? You know, we should just be able to cast a vote for a person, and then that person wins. And that's what we have. But not everybody has that. I forget the state now out east. It's Vermont or Connecticut or one of them. But they use ranked choice voting. There are municipalities around the country. Some large cities elect their mayor that way. And in Minneapolis and St. Paul, they do it. And one of the offshoots of this is that it makes more civil campaigns. Because if you say, my opponent is a terrible person, you are alienating all of the people that might vote for your opponent. But with ranked choice voting, you're courting not only your fans, but then other people as well. Because remember, after you vote, if the person you voted for is in last place, that vote gets thrown out, and then they take your second place vote. So what you find is that the candidates are kind of nicer to each other because they don't want to offend maybe that second place vote that they might be for somebody. That sounds complicated, doesn't it? And it is a little bit, but it's the way they do it. And some people say it's actually a fairer or a better way to distill the will of the people in elections. That's the Mincing Rascals. They talked about that, and at the end they did their recommendations. The Mincing Rascals, wherever you listen to your finer podcast. Loved and I was, that's not what I see. Thank you, Domiti. Look what I got. Look what you taught me. This is our weekly Vibe Score segment where we talk about some of the things we didn't get to earlier in the day. We rate them. Griffin always starts us out with a song. What are we listening to here, Griff?
That's the song Thank You Next by Ariana Grande.
Oh!
The number one song in America on Thanksgiving was called Thank You Next. I like that.
That was a fine song. I'm happy for her. I'm sure that that's making a lot of people happy.
Oh, it's huge. It was immediately a huge viral sensation and now just a bona fide number one hit. It is addressed to her ex-boyfriends, and she calls them out by name. So she recently broke off her engagement with Pete Davidson. Joe's got the latest on that, I think, for us.
He's trying to stay quiet.
He'll update us with all the details on that in a second. But then she also mentions an ex of hers, Mac Miller. She calls him out by name. His real name was Malcolm, who, as you know, died earlier this year. It's terribly tragic. And then another ex of hers. And what she's saying to all of them is, thank you for what you've taught me, but also next. So it's sort of a double-edged kind of address, or it's just a complicated emotion that's wrapped up very nicely in the super simple three-word chorus of thank you next. So people just immediately responded to it. It's an exciting song, and I think it's awesome.
I saw the headlines about this. I hadn't heard the song, though. I read about music more than I listen to it, Griff, and I saw that it was a tribute to Mac Miller, and I thought that was nice. I didn't know much about their connection, but I know when he passed, that really was hard for a lot of you guys that followed him.
Oh, it's just, I don't even know where to begin. He was 26. It's tragic.
Yeah. So that song, now I feel bad because listen to that song. I think, I was an 85, but now maybe I'm a 92.
I'm like a 95. I just think it's great.
Yeah. I was a 0. Now I'm a 20.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. Domiti.
I know, man. Domiti. I hate to let you down.
Own your emotions, Domiti. That's very powerful and brave of you.
But you saw people going crazy with this song online, right, Domiti?
The headlines were more interesting than the song.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah,
I just don't agree. I mean, the headlines are drawn from the song, and it became a meme instantly because in the song she says, one taught me love, one taught me patience, one taught me pain.
Sounds like a Hallmark card. I mean, it's...
But then people were taking pictures of, like, notable trios or just anything that has like three different things.
Oh, nice.
You say one taught me love, one taught me patience, one taught me pain.
Let's just let Joe decide. Joe.
Yeah, tie break this.
The one taught me love, one taught me patience, everything. I didn't realize that that's what that is from, because a lot of colleges were doing that with like the most famous bars around campus and everything. Which I thought that was
taught
pretty
me
clever.
Love, patience, pain, yeah.
I just have a tough time enjoying Ariana Grande's music. I don't really have too much against her as a person, and I agree everything that she was.
The story's touching, and what a great sentiment.
It is. Yeah, I can't really drive myself to stay entertained by a whole song of hers ever, really.
You know, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel.
I mean, nothing about the lyrics, nothing about, you know, the meaning of the song, which I do think is great. I just can't believe how many Thanksgiving songs I'm learning today. We talked about it at dinner on Thursday. You know, there's no Thanksgiving songs. I just learned three.
Oh, Adam Sandler,
right?
The turkey song, and then of course Alice's Restaurant, Arlo Guthrie. I didn't even give it to Steve Martin's monologue, but go ahead.
I'll just wrap it up with I give it a 79.
I respect that, and you're such a. I thought you'd just be happy that she's saying thank you next to Pete Davidson, so he can return to
that's
Cassie
true.
David.
Yes,
Your OTP.
That would be my storybook ending. Yes.
You are the only person I know that cares about that relationship, Joel Brand.
Just meant to be.
It's meant to be.
Griffin and I saw on Thanksgiving the movie Widows, the Steve McQueen movie shot in Chicago. Did either of you guys see Widows as well?
I haven't had the chance.
No, that's I'm kind of surprised. I figured that'd be in your wheelhouse, man.
I know. It's funny. I actually had plans Monday night, and then news happened and blew up my plans. So I didn't get to make it to the theater, man.
What did you say about that one, Griff?
I said that I absolutely loved it. I went crazy for it.
Yeah, I did.
Blew me away.
I was there. Here's how the movie ends.
No, sir.
The screen goes black, and then the credits roll up, and there are white letters on a black screen. Point being that the theater is kind of dark. And you know how a lot of times when a movie ends and the lights come up and everybody kind of gets up? We were just sitting there in the dark still, and I'm sitting there with my family, and I'm thinking, I don't know if anybody liked this movie that much. Mm. I was...
It's so funny because I was sitting there like, wow, this was a home run. I know everybody loved it.
And your brother and I, so the four of us, we're family, so your brother and I, your mom and I, all just sat there, and I didn't say anything walking out because I didn't want to be the Debbie Downer and go, well, that was kind of a miss, wasn't it, guys? And you and your mom were... out of your shoes over this thing.
I could not feel less the way you did. It's
and your
so
brother and
funny.
I were okay. It was good, but we, boy, we were not in your
and
space.
And, you know, I heard some lukewarm reviews going into, so I kind of steeled myself for that. But I was also like, I love Steve McQueen. I'm just excited. And this cast is unbelievable. Shot in Chicago. I have to see it.
But I hear it's not making much money at the box office. Like, there's this HuffPost article and a whole bunch of think pieces about why aren't we going to see this movie.
That's interesting.
Is it because of the cast?
That's what people are saying. They're saying, you
people
know,
of color, females.
It's a female action. I've been seeing a lot about it being women action leaders taking the reins in an action movie, and that's why. But I haven't seen much about what could be flaws in the storyline,
you know,
etc.
If that's the way people think of this movie, that doesn't do it justice. I mean, it is. It's a lot. It's not an action movie where women are shooting up the bad guys.
That's what I was hoping for.
And, I mean, there's some of that, but, I mean, it's... I'll tell you what, the women pulling off the heist, I mean, that's what it is. It's them sort of, you know, settling a debt from their husband's heist that went bad. That doesn't happen until the last fifth of the movie. It's the lead-up to that.
Yeah, it's a lot of build-up. But, look, I don't know... I don't know how much you want to kick around anymore. I'll just say I loved it. I'd give it a 97. Yeah. I truly was blown away.
Yeah, well, I'm happy for you. I give it an 85. And you guys will have to let us know. Let me ask you guys this. Where are we on permanent Christmas trees?
Permanent Christmas trees. I like the new rhetoric for it.
Yeah, it's not artificial. They're not fake. They're permanent. They last a family a generation.
I give those 100. There's something weird about having a live... Well, actually, dead tree, because you cut it off in your house.
A tree corpse.
Yes. Yeah. It's a little morbid. Trees are living things.
So you're against real Christmas trees as much as you are for permanent trees.
Correct.
Wow.
Boy, there's not one without the inverse in my world.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, Griff, where are you on permanent?
I think they're fine. I am charmed by a real tree, though. But I've also never done it on my own. And I understand that real trees are more of a hassle, so I think when it comes to a time in my life when I'm making Christmas tree decisions, I might go permanent. But I would like to say I give real trees. No, we're giving
so permanent trees.
Fake trees, I give a 70. I think they're good.
Joey, where are you?
You know, now that you bring it up, I want to say my entire childhood was split right down the middle. We had a real tree in our old house, and then when we moved, when I was about 13. We got a real or a fake tree. I'm sorry, a permanent tree.
So just to be clear, the terminology, there's permanent trees and then there's tree corpses. And right. So you pick one or the other.
Totally non-biased terms whatsoever.
Yes.
Yeah, boy, if I can't get some points out of that, I mean...
I think if a real tree is a tree corpse, then a permanent tree is like a tree ghost. It's like this sort of
or
in between.
A tree mannequin.
You know, what you need to think of, though, real trees are a crop that we harvest and plant again. So this thing about it's a tree, it's a beautiful thing. Who am I to cut it down? Do you feel that way when you mow the lawn or when you pull weeds? It's a plant that we plant and we harvest and we plant anew.
And it's somebody's job, too.
Yes. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know what? I'm going to get a real tree. I'll be back.
I mean, we also breed, like, fried chicken. Chickens for, I mean, you know, we breed things.
Yeah, but have you tried permanent chicken?
It's so good. Do we have time for one more, John? Are we done with the five scores? Really quickly, guys, what do you guys think about holiday shopping? 100, it's alive and well. 0, it's a thing of the past.
You mean in the stores?
In the stores. Like the holiday shopping craze, the Black Friday sales. With the internet, I think there are sales all the time. There are deals all the time. What's the big deal? Why are people still mobbing each other in stores?
Yeah, I don't understand it either, Don.
If you know, we're going to kick this around a little bit on the business lunch, I think, with Amy Guth coming up, but if you click around on this, there are as many stories as you could want and many like viewpoints on this topic as you could possibly want. You could just pick one, and they're all different. Like, it's dead. It's actually coming back. Like, it just depends on who you talk to. I feel like it's so frustrating. I don't know what the answer is. Like,
I think it's very local, too. I was at Target yesterday morning. My wife says, come on, let's go to Target. And it wasn't because we wanted to be part of the madness. We had some shopping to do, and she knew an item that was on sale. It was not very busy at the Target store. We were at 10 in the morning in the city, you know, on the north side of the city. So, but some folks, remember those Walmart scenes we were posting and listening to? Some Walmarts were just going cuckoo bananas out there, people fighting. That's the thing. How about this? 1 to 100, how much do you love people fighting over big screen TVs at Walmart? That's like part of my Christmas tradition. I love that scene. 95.
Oh, 100 too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, higher 90s.
Thank you, fellas. By the way, just a quick story from Michelle Obama's book. Maybe this is something you are going to get or give, or you've got some time to read over the holidays. Her book just came out. Everybody's reading it. It's called Becoming. If you're a Chicagoan, I think you would appreciate this. Politics aside, this is just a story of a child growing up in Chicago and becoming a woman who would be the first lady. What a great story. I don't know if there's ghost writers or editors or people that help these people, but when you read a book by the Bushes or the Clintons or the Obamas after they're president, turns out they're usually pretty good writers. They tell their stories in, I think, pretty compelling ways. And if this is all her own pen, then not only is it a good story, but she's good at it. An example in a minute. I've been enjoying Becoming by Michelle Obama. And, of course, at the beginning, she talks about her youth. It's a chronological telling of her life. When Michelle Obama was in kindergarten, you, she, anybody knew then that she was not to be trifled with, that she was a determined young lady, Michelle Obama. When she was in kindergarten, they did a spelling bee. The kids had to stand up and spell colors. And when it came to her turn, she was able to do some of the simple ones like blue and red. But eventually she missed on one of the words, and she had to sit down. And two other kids were able to finish them all, and they got gold stars. And that bothered her. And that night she tossed and turned in bed, going over the word time and again that she had misspelled. It was the word white. Not that that's consequential, that word per se, but it was a word that she couldn't spell. And so she practiced it all night long. And the next day she goes to school, and she tells the teacher, I want to do the spelling bee thing again and get a gold star. And the teacher said, no, we're not doing that. We're moving on. We have more things to work on. And this little kindergartner girl says, no, I want to do the spelling bee to get the gold star. And the teacher said, okay. And so she ran the words with her again, and she got them all right, and she got the gold star and wore it proudly. That's just the way she was. She wasn't going to be denied, and she was really attentive and vigorous at the things she did. She learned to play the piano from her aunt who lived downstairs, her great aunt, actually. And her great aunt was stern, and the two of them would butt heads all the time. For instance, Michelle Obama would learn a song on the piano, but the way her great aunt taught it was, you will play that song over and over and over and over again until I say you've got it right. And it was tedious. One time she actually skipped ahead in the book when she wasn't looking, and she learned a different song, Michelle, a complicated song all by herself, and then proudly played it for her great aunt one day, and the aunt was furious. She said, no, you're not supposed to do that. She says, I can. Look, I've learned the new song on my own. And she wouldn't have it. She said good night to Michelle. That was her way of dismissing the kids. The great aunt was able to get Roosevelt University's auditorium hall for the recital. And so the kids all showed up for the recital. And Michelle wrote, "I knew my song so well, I hardly had to think about it. I just had to start moving my hands. And yet, there was a problem. When I discovered in the split second it took me to lift my little fingers to the keys, I was sitting at a perfect piano, it turned out, with its surfaces carefully dusted, its internal wires precisely tuned, its 88 keys laid out in a flawless ribbon of black and white. The issue was that I wasn't used to flawless. In fact, I'd never once in my life encountered it. My experience of the piano came entirely from Robbie's squat little music room with its scraggly potted plant and a view of our modest backyard. The only instrument I'd ever played was her less than perfect upright, with its honky-tonk patchwork of yellowed keys and its conveniently chipped middle C. To me, that's what a piano was. The same way my neighborhood was my neighborhood, my dad was my dad, and my life was my life. It was all I knew. And now, suddenly, I was aware of people watching me from their chairs as I stared hard at the high gloss of the piano keys, finding nothing there but sameness. I had no clue where to place my hands. With a tight throat and chugging heart, I looked out to the audience, trying not to telegraph my panic, searching for the safe harbor of my mother's face. Instead, I spotted a figure rising from the front row and slowly levitating in my direction. It was Robbie. We had brawled plenty by then, to the point where I viewed her a little bit as an enemy. But here in my moment of comeuppance, she arrived at my shoulder almost like an angel. Maybe she understood my shock. Maybe she knew that the disparities of the world had just quietly shown themselves to me for the very first time. It's possible she needed simply to hurry things up. Either way, without a word, Robbie gently laid one finger on middle C so that I would know where to start. And then, turning back with the smallest smile of encouragement, she left me to play my song. From Becoming by Michelle Obama. Let's find out what's coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Domitee's got the stories that matter on WGN.